protection, hunting dangerous and delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set him roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order.
A new world order. Attention.
Government.
This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations,
gentlemen,
the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for...
Touch Jones, touch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
You're listening to Stronghold Radio. I am Dutch Jones, currently the person behind the mic. Coming to you from Cahuilla, California, a little hole in the middle of California, a strange, eclectic place. Kind of like a drain. it's a mixture of everything here. We got hippies, liberals, militants, Hare Krishnas, Catholics. There's actors, Hollywood types, sodomites living in the community down below there. It's just a wonderful mix of weirdity, and we continue to fight it every day. And angering the masses, angering the people, but that's okay because that's not my intent to anger them. My intent is to make people think, and when they listen here, and we just want folks to go, oh yeah, maybe I should check that out, or be convicted if they're wrong. And that's the toughest thing. When people are wrong, they get angry. Well, we like to bring you the Christian militant worldview as best we can. Today's Tuesday, so we'll get an hour of Steve Klein talking about Code 20 and the battle against Islam and those kind of things. And then Thursday, of course, I think we may be doing a recorded message this Thursday because I think the pastor's doing something. But we'll be playing a sermon. What was the sermon that he wanted us to play? Remember, he told us to pull a sermon on jurisdiction. So we got to find that sermon on jurisdiction if he's not here this Thursday for Practical Christianity, just to let you guys know. Does anybody know if we were heard on Liberty Tree Radio last night? I have no idea. Nobody got back to me to tell me if it was on there or not. We did run out of here last night and go to a town hall meeting, so we could talk about wireless connection, and the guy didn't show up. So we sat through the county's general plan and police and fire updates, or sheriff and fire. Oh, man. I tell you, when I used to work for cities and counties and had to videotape those things and sometimes do presentations, I never really appreciated just how boring they were because I was usually busy doing something during them, so I had a vested interest in it. But boy, sitting and listening to how they want to program the state. They've got legislation coming down the line on a state level in California. Now get this. All water belongs to the river. So if you live in a basin where it rains on the mountainside, goes down into the aquifer, and you pump it out of the ground with your well, you're stealing the water. And it belongs to the river, and you have to pay for it. So they want to meter. This is legislation pending. It's not something they did. And they want to monitor your septic systems now. They want to monitor your wells is one thing that they want to do. So that's what they're coming after. All you people that you know, followed what I agree with and getting into the country, well, you're going to get in California, they're going after it. And in the plan, it was easy to see in the general plan that their goal is to get people out of the country and into the cities, to increase the sphere of influence of all the major population sites so that they can gobble up these little towns. And what was funny is I saw several things at work here. I saw cities trying to strengthen their tax base, of course. I saw little communities, people representing the little communities saying and saying things along the lines of, well, can't we force businesses to go into the little communities and developers to build houses into the small towns? It's, what do you mean force? This is America. You can't say, okay, you have to go build a Walmart in that population 2,000 town. But there were actually people in the audience that wanted them to do that. Curb and gutter things. They want curb and gutter. They've cut 12% of the public safety budget. And 20% of the rest of the budget for everything across the board. So budgets are hurting here. The big thing was water, though. There are places in this valley, the San Joaquin Valley, where the ground has sunk 50 feet And I'm not talking about a sinkhole. I'm talking about whole huge tracts of land have sunk 50 feet because the aquifer hasn't been replenished. They haven't reloaded the underwater basins because they've just sucked it all out. And what's weird is it turned out the county of Tulare sells a portion of water to L.A. And people are like, why are we selling water when we need water here? It's so valuable. The price of water is going to go up 4 to 5 times. Utilities are going to go up 4 to 5 times in this state. These politicians were telling us last night. They said it's just the nature of the beast. It's kind of those attitudes, if you build it, they will come. Well, they built all this infrastructure in California. Everybody came, and now there's not enough water. And the industries are leaving because the economy's bad, so you have what they admit to is an 18% unemployment rate, but it's more like 20 to 30. And so we've got these mass population groups, you know, anywhere from 50 to 90,000 where there's no businesses, there's no industry, there's no development, and they're trying to manage it with a diminishing tax base. And so what are they going to do? More rules, more regulations, more zoning. That's what the general plan is, zoning. It's zoning what you can do and what you can't do, coming up with fines for things. The fire department was there. They want everyone to put an address on their building. Not everybody up here does it. Now, I don't want to get into it today, but there are certain people who say that once you put an address on your building, it's like putting a license plate on your car. The county owns it. Well, you've already got a parcel number, and the county knows that, and they tax you based on that parcel number. But property taxes are going up. I know of people personally that have said that they may have to sell their property because they can't afford the property taxes anymore. They've inherited the property. It was bought for nothing compared to what today's prices are, you know, 50, 60 years ago or even 100 years ago in land grants or homesteading acts, things like that. And now the state's coming and saying, well, you owe us $10,000 a year. Well, I don't have $10,000. This house was built by my great-grandpappy, and he gave it to my daddy, and my daddy gave it to me. Well, you'll have to sell your property to pay your taxes now, won't you? Or we'll just take it. So a lot of that going on, tyrannies. Poor Stacy was sitting next to me going, I don't. What are they talking about? I said, they're talking about tyranny, about making everybody move into the cities, about controlling what we drink, what we eat, where we poop, everything. And It was just terrible sitting through it. And you know what? Most of the people in there went right over their heads. There were probably 5 or 6 of us that got it. I'm real fortunate to have many years' experience sitting through planning commissions and council meetings and things like that. I've learned how to, about every third word I understand, and I go, uh-oh, that's not good. We have a good commissioner for our area, Ishida. He's kind of like a Japanese Gregory Peck. He's like 7 feet tall. And he looks like Gregory Peck and talks like George Takei without the gayness, right, Lou? It's a little less gay than George Takei. Yes. I can't do it. Lou's better at it. Yeah.
Oh, my.
But they've been working on this general plan for, like, my lifetime, and I don't know. Every time they revise it, they get sued. They spend so much money on lawyers and stuff. We found out that the county of Tulare, and I'm sure your county is the same, spends about $75,000 to $100,000 a year on lobbying the federal government. And they were all happy because they found out a bridge that needed to be rebuilt was going to be built by the federal government, 98% of it anyway, and they're all cheering. And I said, it's still your tax money, you idiots. I didn't say idiots, though. I was thinking it. I go, but it's some big magic tax, you know, magical bowl of money that it comes out of. I can't remember what I said.
Magical
money pit. Yeah, that it just comes out of. And there are only a couple of people who are like, it's still your tax dollar, it doesn't matter. But it's coming back here, and that's, you know, that's $3 million. I think it was, they were arguing whether or not the bridge was going to cost $1 million or $3 million. Even the board of supervisor and the engineer didn't know. And they're saying, well, costs are going down. And so I said, what do you mean costs are going down? They said, well, contractors are willing to work for less. The material costs have gone up, but the labor costs have gone down. And because people are going, yeah, I'll work for $10 an hour instead of $30 prevailing union wage, which was the standard here for a long time. So now they're getting jobs done by, you know, real contractors, and they're doing a lot of aggressive bidding and making sure that they get a lot of bids on things. So this, they're going to get a bridge put in. That it's a one-lane bridge. A lot of people want gutter and sewer and lights. Again, people moving to the country and wanting to change the lifestyle. I'm thinking about just doing a mining claim and go living on it. I mean, the sad news is that we wouldn't do the radio show anymore, but we'd be living like hermits again on the side of a river, and I would be happy. Stacy's like, yeah. And just, come to church on Sundays and do my thing. But because even here in this urban interface is really what it is, urban wilderness interface. It's not wilderness, but interface here. It's just, it's like living in a city now. And all the people and all the chaos, and that's what they want for you. They want Lou to grow up in a city. They don't want him to grow up out here. They're working on all the transportation issues and making sure everybody can't afford to live that far from where they work. That's what they want. What's gasoline now? You went into town, did you see? It's like 4.25, 4.30 a gallon now here.
Yeah. It's like
4.49 a gallon.
Yeah. $4.25
at Shell. Well, you don't want Shell gas anyway.
No,
it's got water in it.
I know. I like
the Shell gas up here always causes problems.
Chevron
so
up here is cleaner.
Makes our weed eaters run bad. So we go to Chevron. Couple of things in the courts. Some guy tried to introduce a bill making it illegal for corn to be used as fuel in California because it's raising food prices and it's taking away food from the dairymen. Because they like to corn feed their dairy cows. It got shot down in committee by evil tyranny, as he put it. They're totally going out of their way to take food off the table, literally. Food is a weapon. Stacy posted some stuff on an Amish group that were raided for selling raw milk back in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I believe.
Pennsylvania, Ohio. The Amish are just being inundated. You know why? Because it's easy. Completely easy to go after the Amish because they don't fight back, so they're cutting their teeth on the Amish, and they're working with this USDA bill that went through. Remember the seed bill, the food bill that went through? That's what it is, direct result of that. Everybody kind of poo-pooed it and said, "Oh, they're not going to do that." Well, they did it here. They rounded up 500,000 pounds of cheese from Bravo Cheese and spanked them and fined them and made them change everything they do, change their food. So that's going on. But in a weird reversal, I posted it here. The Ninth Federal District Court, Circuit Court, excuse me, in San Francisco was handling a case on the birth certificate. And with the new long form came out and all the weirdness with that, I was looking, there's different fonts, the paper's different. I was reading an article before we came on the air. They're saying they found a birth certificate that was issued an hour before this one supposedly was, and it's a different kind of paper, it's a different font style, completely different ink style. They're like, why would they change it in an hour? So they presented that to the court today, and the court said, you know what, that's enough basis for us to continue with this on the eligibility. There's like 40 people that have signed on to that case in San Francisco, and I'm going to post it again, I think, and see if I can do that. Miami Herald. I found it on the Huffington Post, and everybody's kind of just repeating what the Huffington Post had to say. But I heard it on the radio this morning, and I was really surprised. They were standing out in front of the federal courthouse with a giant blown-up version of his birth certificate. There's all kinds of weirdness on it. Like, there's a footnote that they don't include, and everybody wants to know what that footnote was. Some people are saying it's saying that he was born in Kenya and that this was done 4 days later. It was issued... Huh?
He was born in Nilbog.
Nilbog. Yeah, Nilbog, which is goblin backwards. So, yeah, he was they issued the birth certificate 4 days later after he got from Kenya to Hawaii. But, we'll follow that. I'm not going to get too excited about it, but I think that's amazing that the court's going to let it go through. I don't know who he's going to kill now. He had to go after OBL to get some attention away from his birth certificate. Now those communist sodomites in San Francisco are throwing a wrench into the system and letting the case go forward. There have been several other cases that have been thrown out of court. And I'm truly amazed that this one's going to be allowed to go forward. I was reading today, mixed emotions among talk radio. Rush Limbaugh did a real satirical thing talking about how great Obongo was, but it was all sarcasm, and idiots on the left thought he was really praising him. And then they're like, oh, he was making fun of Obongo. Like, nobody could do this. They're saying things like, oh, it took Bush 8 years, and he didn't get him, and it only took Obongo 2 years. Woo! So that, they're going to get some traction out of that argument. Still no pictures, still no statements from the SEAL team that I've seen. They pulled that picture that we were talking about yesterday. It appeared in European newspapers and Pakistani newspapers. And I think it was a hoax that somebody perpetrated on the papers. I don't think the government was dumb enough to release a picture of that poor quality. But there are still people today sending me, I just got an email and I got a message right now on Facebook. I know it's going to be like, come on, get over it, stop being a conspiracy theorist. You know, and he did. It's like, okay, you know, maybe the picture was a hoax. I guarantee that's what this is. No, it's not, actually. I'm surprised. Because there's been some long-running debates on Facebook about it, and it's weird because I usually only allow conservative anti-One World Order, anti, you know, pro-militia guys in, but I always get the guy who sneaks in, he modifies his post, and then and do, you know, just so they can get in, and then they change here. Let's see. Go on, Dutch, living in your magical little world filled with conspiracies around every corner and secret cabals. Careful you don't dent your tinfoil hat. He's just an idiot, this guy Steve. Well, okay, fine. You know, when you're lining up in the FEMA camp and getting your daily ration of rice and beans, you know, I'll be running around the hilltops with my family free. So that's good. But, yeah, that's what we've been doing. Oh, somebody just posted a thing on urban sniping. It's funny that you mentioned that. I don't know, is Minuteman in here? Is Minuteman in here? I don't see him. I talked to Minuteman today. If we do our October training, it's still up in the air, but we're still talking about doing it. We always go ahead as if we're going to do it, and then we'll cancel at the last minute and ruin all your fall plans. No, I'm kidding. We'll give you more head. But Minuteman wants to do a whole thing on urban survival. He's really been focusing on that, and I'm not a specialist in that. I mean, I've got some training in it, and I've done some investigation into it. You know, I can make a lean-to out of homeless people's skin if I have to. What?
Ew.
What?
Ew.
I'm just saying, I can survive in a city, you know. And but John Wayne said just some tips about urban sniping and stuff. People don't, and I'm done with the other stuff, so that's good that you put that in there. People think of sniping in a general term. They just think sniping is, you know, putting a bullet long range is where you want it. You know, 2.5 miles now with all these high-end weapons and stuff. I've never shot anything over 800 to 1,000 yards. And so that's the extreme. And where I live now, 400 to 500 yards is where it's going to be. If I go down in the valley, well, then maybe I may get some long shots. In the desert, some really long shots. But to be honest with you, I don't hey, Minuteman's in there. Cool. It's funny because I didn't see him in there. But talking about urban,
He just went in.
Yeah,
he just came in.
Urban scenarios are something that we really need to talk about, both survival and tactical. And I'm just not the guy to do it. I mean, I could spend a lot of time researching it, but we're gonna have Minuteman if we do our training in October, which I hope we do. Well, just keep praying for us. Keep praying for our pastor's health and for the health of this congregation up here that we're able to host these kind of things anymore. But, yeah, urban sniping is a completely different thing. I of course, in the Army, learned how to shoot long range, you know, in open terrain, a little bit of mount training, military operations, urban terrain, very little back then in the 80s. They didn't get into it as much. But I've shot beside police snipers, and it's a completely different world. A lot of police snipers are 50 to 100-yard stuff, so there is a different attitude there. So it's good that you learn it. It's good that you figure it out. It's good that you realize, something as simple as shooting through a window, shooting through a glass window versus shooting through, you know, 6 inches of dirt that, you know, the guy's hiding behind, or a cinder block wall that the guy's hiding behind. The terminal ballistics on a car. What happens when you put a bullet through a car door? What happens when you put a bullet through a front window versus a side window? We've studied this stuff. Lou and I have looked at all the training videos. You know, we don't go shoot cars or anything. Kicking the microphone. Are we done with the show now? You kicking the mic? Stacey, all of you that just got knocked out of your seats because that big thump sound, that was Stacey kicking the microphone.
I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
She's sorry. Well, the beating will come later. I'll beat you later.
Well, it's slippery.
Yeah, it is kind of slippery.
I'm sorry.
Okay, just don't let it happen again. I'm putting the beating stick away. I don't know where my beating stick is, actually.
Okay.
Where's my beat?
Okay,
I got a pink slipper down here I could throw at you. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot of things that you've got to look into in those, and we're going to try to answer some of those maybe during our class. I know the pastor, he's taking a, if he does teach a class, I'm going to see if he can enter some of that stuff into it for that. But yeah, it's a different world. It's a completely different world. Like a lot of police officers, they only talk headshots. You know, but honestly, you know, all these sniper movies where they show a guy doing a 1,000-yard headshot, it's not very realistic. I mean, there are probably people in the world that can do it, no doubt, but center mass is what they always trained us to do. The important thing is to stop the threat and to make sure that they don't harm you or the hostages or anybody else. But urban sniping is completely different. Think about it. Are you going to run around in a ghillie suit in Los Angeles? Unless you're in Griffith Park or something, I don't see it working. You know, Balboa Park? Is that the name? Balboa Park? You know, I'm trying to think of some of the big parks in L.A. when I was there. No, it's not going to work. There's so many different things you're going to have to do. Breaking your weapon down, things like that, you know. Shooting through buildings rather than over them or around them. Completely different than laying in a hide in a valley like I'm in right now, and I'm looking at a house about 2.5 miles away on the other side, and if I had the proper optics, the proper training, the proper weapon, and just enough luck, you know, and I had to take out a threat over there, yeah, I can see them, so it can be done. Probably not with my skill level. I think I've lost that ability. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that kind of thing, so that's an excellent topic to bring up. What are you looking at me like that for? Trying to distract me? Mm-hmm. You just knocked out the sound when I did that. When I hit you, it knocked the sound out.
Okay,
my headphones. yeah, the average sniping is 75 to 125 yards. Yeah, that may be the average. I've actually seen the ones I've been involved in where I was videotaping, you know, like either before or after down with the Riverside. They were all like right across the street. I mean, literally, you got the street at about 20 feet wide, and then they're on their car, and they're looking through the front window of the Home Depot, you know. Or not Home Depot. What was it? It was a, was it a Circuit City, the one I saw? I can't remember the store. It was an appliance store or something. But, yeah, they don't take very long shots. They don't deal with windage and things like that and a severe drop at 125 yards. They zero their weapons for 100 yards, and they know. They just do, you know, they know what it's going to be. They're not going to have, you know, like Carlos Hathcock, you know, well, was it ridiculous? It was like in one of his competitions, when I was reading his book, he had to aim like 119 inches to the left because of the wind. So not even just the adjustment. He still had to aim. It went off, and the bullet like made a big old arc into the target. You know, and then you've got the drop and things like that, and so there's a whole lot involved in long range shooting that you don't have in urban sniping. In fact, it'd probably be more fun to be able to do that. When I was in the Army, we were told never take a shot less than 300 yards, you'd be detected. In fact, in the school in the 80s, you would fail if you were closer than 300 yards when you took your shot. They lased it out. And they said, no, you took your shot too close. You know, and one, they could probably hear you. Basically, you fired a blank at a human holding up a sign, and he had to, you know, write down what was written on the sign. But, yeah, the ranges at Fort Benning, you know, honestly, over 800 yards, you're taking a risk, you know. You have to assess your abilities. And under stress of battle, you know, I know all these people that take all these classes. They're bench rush shooters. They do all this stuff. But there's a big difference taking the shot when you're punching a hole in a silhouette-shaped paper versus when it's an actual human being, whether he's shooting you or not. It's similar to buck fever. I know all these guys that go to the range, sight in their lever action 30-30s and do magnificent. But the minute they're in the field and their heart's pumping and, you know, they start to sweat, everything's different. It's completely different.
Gross motor.
Gross motor versus fine motor. So I've got people in my life that have had all these civilian sniping classes, and they make fun of me and like to take jabs at me and stuff. But I'm like, okay, let's just see what happens when the stuff hits the fan. You know, how you do on your first live target. We'll see what happens, you know, if you're able to do it without hesitation, you know, and do the right thing. yeah, I see Scotty's wife's a little tired, so we're still praying for her. Minuteman says the block he lives on is 200 yards. If you're going into long range stuff, as you walk around, learn to estimate ranges, then check it with your range finder. You know, the most important thing you can do if you can't get to a range, and that's a good point, is do range estimations. Like, I can look out the window here, and I know from here to the corner of the next house down the block, that's 285 yards to the corner of the house. Not because I'm an expert and I can do it, but because I've gotten my rangefinder out and I've tested it. I know my front door from the top of the hill behind my house is about, I think it's 425. It's 425 yards, not meters. I know the difference. And so I know that. So the stuff that I have that shoots long range, I've got it all figured out. You know, and I don't have really nice gear, so I've got mil dot scope, so I do hold off. I don't sit there and click, 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 click. I don't have a spotter, you know, to do the math for me. I don't use a calculator. I am a poacher. I used to have to shoot for food. My father would have me shoot for food. Ammo was expensive when you're poor, and every shot counted. So I knew what kind of hold off to use. I've taken the classes. I can do the math. I've got the formula. I've got three or four different sniper books, you know, the notebooks. But I don't get that clinical and scientific about it. I just know that if I have to put a round in somebody's chest at the corner of that house down there, I know I'm able to do it if I have to under ideal conditions and if I don't freak out. And that's the other thing. You've got to be realistic. Even if you've done it 20 or 30 times before, it may have been 20 years since you took a shot in anger. So, you know, and bragging plays a big part in this. Everybody wants to brag. Oh, yeah, I'm a mean fighting machine. I mean, it's easy to say if somebody kicks in your door, you're going to wrestle with them. Yeah, sure. But sitting there and thinking about it, contemplating it, looking at a human face through your scope, whole different scenario, folks. And I've learned that if you try and share with people those experiences, they either get offended, call you a liar, don't understand it, and they're just not teachable. So I don't share that kind of information with anybody anymore. I have no desire to educate a lot of people. I told you that. Since my stroke, I've been getting kind of narrow casting in what I want to share. So, folks, we'll be back after the break. You're listening to Stronghold Radio. I am Dutch Jones for now. I'm not really Dutch Jones. We'll be back after the break.
Looking out across this town kind of makes me wonder how all the things that made us great got left so far behind. This used to be a peaceful place, decent folks, hard-working ways. Now they hide behind locked doors, afraid to speak their mind. I think we need a gunslinger, somebody tough to tame this town. I think we need a gunslinger, there'll be justice all around. While that bunch moved in, you know, shooting up the street, shouting everybody down. The dogs all running loose, wrecked the paper, closed the school. Tired old judge got roughed up too. No one left to make a stand, they whisper, what's the use? I think we need a gunslinger, somebody tell me tame this town. I think we need a gunslinger, there'll be justice all around. We need a gunslinger, somebody tough to tame this town. Think we need a gunslinger, there'll be justice all around. I think we need a gunslinger, somebody tough to tame this town. Think we need a gunslinger, there'll be justice all around.
when the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Radio Stronghold, we're coming back. Talking about what the people want to talk about. Not what other people tell me to talk about, but what the listeners want to hear. And if I have information I can share, I do it. I don't sit back and worry. I don't go, oh my, I might offend someone. Oh my, they may come and get me. I'm just sharing legal stuff, you know. So that's just the way it is. Nothing we're talking about here is illegal, so... Don't get yourself in a bunch. Urban sniping, one thing you might want to consider is weapon choice. You know, I think it was John Wayne said he doesn't want to have to bring some big tactical weapon around and hide it. One of the things that I saw a trend, and I don't know if it's still a trend or not, because I haven't paid much attention to SWAT sniping and stuff, but they were taking Ruger 10/22s, folding stock with a suppressor. You wouldn't need a suppressor for what we're doing because, you know, the only time we're going to be doing it is if it's full-on social chaos and we're just defending our homes. A Ruger 10/22 with some Aguilar subsonic bullets, that's what the Israelis use and it's what SWAT teams use. They say they use them just for dogs, that's what the SWAT teams, but the Israelis use them for riot control. They see a group of stone-throwing, Molotov-throwing Palestinian youth. They can kind of pick out who the leaders are, and they head-shoot them from about 100 yards away with these things. You have to do a little modification if you're going to use the Aguilar subsonics, but if you're just going to use Stinger 22s in a post-societal collapse, a Ruger 10/22 with a folding stock fits in a backpack. What were you going to say?
AR-7 if you don't want to spend
AR-7, well, AR, in California, Lou's, you got to talk into the mic, Lou, so they can hear you. Lou said an AR-7, but right now an AR-7 is hard to find in California. Now, I know some other companies make them. But yeah, you could break that down, stick it into the stock, and AR-7 folds right up into its stock. It's a Air Force survival rifle from the 60s from Armalite, and it's got like a 10-round magazine. I don't know how accurate they are, though, Lou. I really don't. When I had one when I was a kid, I used to shoot animals with it to eat, but I'm not sure how accurate it is. But a Ruger 10/22, I know that with a Ruger 10/22 at 100 yards, I could hit a human being, no problem. I used to shoot bowling pins at 200 yards with my Ruger 10/22 in competitions, and they're very, very accurate. You put a decent scope on it. Even a 22 isn't that loud in an urban setting. So if somebody's actually thinking about survival, defending the homestead, taking out key aggressors, you know, because, you know, we're going to stay quorum deo here, key aggressors in a crowd or something, they're coming down the street, Ruger 10/22 is a great choice. It's not going to have the big boom. It's not going to have the recoil. Your follow-up shots are going to be quicker. You can stay way back in a room, and they might not even hear it. We had people out on the shooting range last week shooting a 22 with the pastor, and I was going to go out there. I said, well, when I hear you guys shoot, I didn't know they were shooting 22s. I thought it was going to be 30 cals. And I didn't hear him, and then all of a sudden Stacy goes, hey, they're shooting out there. And I'm looking right now, 75 yards from the shooting range. And I didn't hear them. We had our windows open and everything. So even out here in the open, a 22 isn't that loud. And it's going to have the effect that you want. It's going to stop the zombies. In reality, if you're in an urban scenario, isn't that really what you want? Now, you're not going to get penetration for vehicles and all that kind of stuff. So there are other rifle choices for that. And I can do a show on that. I think any MilSERP, World War II, 30 caliber... British, Russian, or American rifle would be perfect. But you're going to have to modify it with like a choate stock or something so you can move around undetected. Urban sniping calls into everything that you need for rural sniping or wilderness sniping.
Plus, you're going to need access tools, bolt cutters, window breakers, things to leave. You're going to need a lot of door stops to leave doors open. It's like you're going to have to be a search and rescue guy. And that would be good. X-Cop's asking me a question. Have you heard about an additive that's being added to gunpowder that makes the powder inert in 2 years? You sent me an IM on that, and I thought I answered you. I've got gunpowder that's over 7 years old, and it still works. So if it's something they're going to do, I haven't heard about it, but it's something, if you find out about it, let us know. I don't see why they wouldn't do it, and I don't see how they couldn't do it. Maybe put something in there that breaks down the components, but yeah, I could see that. That's why I buy World War II and Vietnam-era bullets. They last forever. And they tend to get stronger over time. So I haven't heard that either. John Wayne's jumping in there, but I haven't heard that either. But when you're selecting something for urban sniping, you know, you got to put together a whole different kind of toolkit, a whole different kind of survival kit, pry bars, grappling hooks so you can climb to the top of a building, or shoot out of a gutter. You need a crowbar to pry up that manhole cover to get in there. It's a whole different world. And the only thing, my understanding of it, is just from studying it as a counter sniper, you know, seeing what terrorist snipers were doing. I'm not saying if you're an urban sniper, you're a terrorist, but like the stuff that happened in Bosnia, Kosovo, Herzegovina, those kind of things, studying those cases. Interestingly enough, I had somebody go, oh, there's no way snipers are plausible anymore in an urban environment because they've come up with this new device that uses satellites, sonic radar, triangulation mathematics, and as soon as you fire a single shot, it uses a Gatling gun to vaporize you. Well, where are they going to put them all? They're going to be mounted on vehicles. They're going to be in schools and things like that. So, no, it's not going to get rid of snipers. And that's only if you're dumb enough to sit in a window or an exposed position and shoot through something that's a bigger opening than a loophole that you've pounded in the wall with your ball-peen hammer that's only big enough for your scope to shoot through. So I don't worry about the counter-sniper stuff on the technological level. And yes, sniping is still a viable force multiplier on the battlefield. A lot of people don't want to talk about it. They think it's bushwhacking. They think it's unmanly. You know, and the guys who usually say that are the big steroidal guys that want to kick indoors. Yeah, you guys want to keep fighting like that, go ahead. I can't do it anymore. So ideally, my thing would be is to stop the threat way far away from my house. Let the horde of people know that if they keep coming, they're going to pay a huge price for it. I don't want to be in a city, but if that were to happen here, you know, just start identifying the leaders and taking them out. Stopping the first vehicle by putting, you know, a 300 Winchester mag armor-piercing bullet right through the block. You don't need a 50 cal, 338 Lapua, 300 Winchester mag. You know, everybody's saying, oh, I got to get me one of those great big fat 50 cals or, you know, whatever the new things are, the 490s and all that. 300 Winchester Magnum, proper loading, proper projectile, proper bullet placement will stop just about anything the civilians can throw at you. And that's all you really want to do. I mean, you're just trying to make them go on to the next target. It's kind of along the lines of putting a sign in your front yard that says, hey, my neighbor's against guns, so I just want to let you know he's not armed. So if you want to rob his house, he's not going to put up much of a fight. And that's what you need to do. And it would be more on a block-by-block basis. If you had, you know, four or five sniper teams up on a block, you could defend it against about anything but air cover. And most zombies don't have air cover, right, Lou? Not that we know of yet. So you got, you know, hordes of people who didn't prepare coming down your street to loot. I mean, they're looting right now in Georgia or where was it, Alabama? I got the article here somewhere. They're looting right now down there, and they're having to put police out in the tornado ravaged areas. And of course, what they do is they put up a curfew from like 8 at night till 9 in the morning, and anybody in there is going to be arrested. But they're still not, because how many cops do they have? They're not going to stop looting. It's like after the fires I was involved in, I go back and a bunch of my stuff is stolen, but the only thing they were good at doing was keeping me from going in to protect my stuff. I never should have left the containment area. Let's see, here it is. Alabama. It's actually Alabama. A city in Alabama, they're having looting. Which was weird because after the Japanese earthquake and tsunami and nuclear disaster, did we hear anything about looting? Is looting just an American thing now? It must happen in Europe too, but I haven't heard of any, you know, widespread disasters in Europe. They just have social chaos. They don't have environmental chaos like we do.
Random crazy riots.
Yeah, random crazy riots. But in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, yeah, I've got it right here in front of me. They got hit by two tornadoes, bunch of structures, a couple dozen people killed. They only have 280 police officers. They split them into two shifts, 12-hour shifts, and they're just going nuts, going from house to house arresting looters. And it's ridiculous. The simplest thing would have been to say, okay, everybody that's got a gun, come here. I do swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state of Alabama, and deputize all the survivors, and, okay, you're responsible for your property or your property on either side of you. If you see a looter there and it's not your neighbor, hold him at gunpoint until we can get there, and that way the cops don't have to. I mean, we're 285 cops split into two. Figure most, you know, a lot of those are going to be officers and management and dispatch, so there may be 100 cops on the street at any one time in a major city. It's 94,000 people, and they're going to have 100 cops on the street stopping, let's say 10% of the population is looting. That's 9,000, let's be fair, 9,000 people. So you got 100 cops versus 9,000. What is that, like 99 to 1 or something? Somebody do the math for me. Yeah, they're going to do a really good job. At least the cops there aren't looting like in Katrina, right? There's been no reports of that going on. Which is funny because, like, when I was a kid in Colorado and we'd get tornadoes that come through, nothing like what they had. We didn't have looters. We had gawkers who come out and take pictures of all the trailers flipped over. I grew up in trailer parks. The only time I ever saw looters was during a really bad blizzard. I saw people break into a 7-Eleven to get food, but that was about it. And weird. Oh, you got to allow URLs, Lou.
They were allowed.
Yeah, I wonder why they're not allowed now. It says URL removed. They were, because I put a URL in there. Kind of weird. In fact, let me try and see what happens. Because I want my guys to be able to do URLs. The listeners must be heard. Yeah. It's about sharing information. Let's see what happens when I do it. Did it stay up?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on the looters in the south. It's kind of weird, but I posted that on Facebook, and we were talking about that. We've got about 17 minutes here coming up. We're going to have Steve Klein on. He's going to talk about, he tried to do a school outreach yesterday, and they had someone within their group. They were trying to work with a Muslim. They were trying to be nice, work with a moderate Muslim, you know, how they claim to be out there, and I guess the guy stabbed him in the back. So I'm going to let him talk in the next hour, and hopefully Liberty Tree Radio will take it. Seems to be a theme this week of people that just, you know, you're supposedly trust, and boom, they stab you in the back. We're going to see a lot more of that as we get closer to the collapse, folks. It's funny, the people that everyone warned me not to trust are the ones that have become the closest to me. And the ones that people have told me, oh yeah, you can count, you can count on me. I got your back. I'll never let you down. They're the ones that stab me in the back. And I do appreciate the few friends that I have now. And I thank you, and I thank all of my digital friends. You're all digital friends. They're not. Is that a new thing? Did I invent that? The digital friends that I have from this show. I appreciate your input. I appreciate your prayers. And I hope one day that we get to meet. Hopefully it's in good times and not on the battlefield, if there's going to be one in my lifetime. But, okay, he posted something on InfoWars, parents outraged over radiation levels. Yeah. I mean, we're getting a lot of hints from God, aren't we? Aren't we, seriously, that we're supposed to have our stuff stored, that we're supposed to be like the ant right now? Fires across America, you know, across Texas, earthquakes, flooding. They blew up that levee today. The Army Corps of Engineers just took out like 300 homes and farm fields in Arkansas so that, was it Ohio? Ohio houses would be saved? Missouri homes would be, well, anyway. Downriver, they blew up levees. They blew up a dike. I don't know what her name was, but they blew up levees so that people up north, their village or their town wouldn't get destroyed. And last night at our planning commission meeting, we found out that we have a levee on the south side of our town for a reservoir and a river. And it turns out it was built by the Army Corps of Engineers when they expanded and built the reservoir. But now some other federal agency is coming in saying it's not a legal levee and it has to come out so it'll flood a hotel. There's a levee around the county prison that the federal government's coming in and said, that's not a legal levee, you got to take it out. So it's flooding right now because they need to repair it. And they said, you can't repair it. It's not a legal levee. So it's ridiculous, you know. And so you get the Corps of Engineers blowing up their own levees. You've got government saying that's not a levee. You can't restrict the river. The river has rights to flood your house. or your business, like we have up here, if it ever happens. I don't know what'll happen to that hotel if they take that levee out, but it should be interesting, because it gets right up to the top of that when they backfill the lake. So, but we're being warned by God. There's no doubt in my minuscule sinful little mind that God's saying, hey, look, people are going to be hurt, societies are going to fall apart, services will be suspended, and it's going to be a lot longer than your 3-day supply of water and what do they call those nut logs, the granola bars that FEMA's telling you. What did they give us last night? The fire department gave us these things: have a 3-day supply of food and water, and always, always obey the evacuation notices. When in doubt, get out. That's what the fire chief for the county said. And oh, the pastor's down there. What's the pastor doing?
I'm taking a garden hose.
Hey, go see what the pastor's doing down there. But
in the garden area.
I don't know, but he's right there. And it's amazing to me that they're trying to. They know something's going to happen. We've got the New Madrid. We've got nuclear plants leaking in Japan. We've got flooding, we've got fires, we've got civil unrest, possibilities. Houses are more important than food from the flooded farms. It depends. Yeah, the food can always come back, and actually, if they flood the farm fields, I see Freedom said, the silt's going to actually make the land better, unless it washes away the topsoil, which is depending on the hydraulics, what's going on. But the houses, yeah, they're going to put the houses underwater and destroy them. But then again, it's like man's stubbornness, right? Try to conquer nature. Try to overcome those things that God put out there. And we put houses in floodplains, don't we? We put houses on the sides of hills in L.A. on stilts and then wonder what happens when they fall. What's he doing?
He's in the garden area spraying for beans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the thistle and stuff's real bad down there. We got to get rid of it. Tomorrow it's Thistle Patrol when I get the good gloves. You're going to use your gloves. You better not forget them. I'm not giving you my gloves again. It's not surprising to me that most people aren't listening, though, are they? Even today, most people are like, oh, no, it's going to be okay. That's the Mississippi River. That can't happen here. But here it's going to be fires, earthquakes, and riots. That's what we have. It's like the fire department that came last night said, oh, we haven't had a major fire incident in decades. Oh, great. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah,
we have a huge fuel load because we had so much. We had 180% of our normal precipitation, and we've been living off like 40% of our normal precipitation. So the fuel load is huge now on the forest floor and in the open spaces, grasses, and all that stuff. And we are definitely, I think when the Santa Ana winds come in here and dry everything out in the next couple days, it's already starting to turn brown. I'm looking down there right now. We're already seeing brown. There's going to be some idiot that's going to set it on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully God will protect us and they won't do it here. I mean, we'll survive. We've got enough clearing around our house, but our neighbors, I'm looking around, they're all under trees and everything. We live kind of in the open. But it's just things. What's more...
Make sure you have a garden hose.
Yeah, well, depends on the fire. Garden hose isn't going to be enough, but just make sure you've cleared your weeds away. Make sure you've got a bug-out plan. Make sure you've got a communication plan in place. Make sure that your family, everybody down to the kids that understand, know what to do when the fire comes or earthquake comes or zombies come. That's what these cues are for. That's why God's giving us these hints. In the Bible, he clearly, said, hey, when these times come, don't go bury your dead. Don't go home to get your mom. Grab your backpack if you got it, your knapsack, and run. Go across the rooftops. Don't go in the streets. Why did he tell people that? Run across the rooftops? Because there's going to be rioting in the streets. Be stealthy. There's so much cool stuff in the Bible that if you just sit and read it, which I highly recommend, or study it in depth, that is great advice that applies for today. Now, today we might not say, run across the rooftops because we have different structures today. Not everything's connected like it was in Jerusalem. But we would say avoid the main roads. We may say go into the sewers, go into the waterways, leave by dark of night. That's the advice that we would get today. But, yeah, definitely. Don't worry. Let the dead take care of the dead, and just get your family out of Dodge. But if you get stuck, you better have a plan. You better have your own stronghold. I mean, if you don't know your neighbor's names, I don't know if now's the time to learn, but that might be a step in the right direction. Yeah, put the dog back over there. Is it going?
Down.
A little training issue with the dog here. Trying to make sure what he's doing. Freedom fighters have arrived. General Carver just makes a statement. Freedom fighters have arrived. But we do what we need to do. We train our families, we store our food, we talk about these things. See, simple people just want to put their head in the sand and talk about simple things. American Idol, NASCAR, how good it feels to be a Christian and how we're supposed to love everybody, all that kind of stuff. Freedom Fighters, I have arrived. I get it. Sorry, I wasn't reading it right. But wise people talk about wise things, and that's what we try to do here on the show. The ammo supplier Firearms for Walmart told me Sporting Goods employee that all ammo manufacturers were going to start adding the additive. Wow, it took a while to recall it. See if I can get the definite. Yeah. Yeah. Walmart, we just heard something. Hello, everybody. We just heard that Walmart may be selling long guns again in California at select stores. There's like these weird little teeter-totter things that ebb and flow. It comes and goes. I don't know why they would decide to do that, but I like that because right now one of the problems we're having in California is once Walmart stopped selling guns because they were the number one retailer of guns in California, all the other places raised their prices. I mean, literally, a pistol that I could go get for $300 in Louisiana is $500 here for a dinky little .22 pistol. Ruger 10/22s, you guys that are all spread out across the country here, I want you to tell me in the chat room what a Ruger 10/22 costs you. Either at a pawn shop or a sporting goods store or wherever you get it, new or used. What do you pay for a Ruger 10/22? And then when I tell you what they're asking for them here for the basic model, you're gonna be blown away. Are you Googling it, Lou? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the next gun we're going to get, Stacy wants a Ruger 10/22, and I think that's a good weapon for her. It's funny because I look online and yeah, I see what they're really going for, like in Utah and Nevada, and I'm like, huh. Lord, I feel like Jonah. Why have you placed me here? Why did I have to go to Nineveh? Why, Lord, am I in Nineveh? These fish slappers aren't worthy of my... The last couple of days I felt that way. It's not how I always feel, but am I wasting my time on these people in California? You know, specific individuals, not everybody. But it's scary to me to see the profiteering that's going on in these gun shops. Scotty, 38, saying, now, New York, $300 for a Ruger 10/22, but look at that, $217 in Florida. Here, you're going to pay about $365 for, for a new one, $365 in California. What are you finding, Lee? But what state is that? Lee found one for $198 online. $410 for the souped up ones, a little nicer. Yeah, John Wayne says $250. Put your state in there. I need to know what state, if you don't mind. They're all over $350 here. When we went to that gun shop the other day, he didn't have any for under $400. And they had a little bit of modifications and stuff like that. Only big markets left is guns, so Walmart is there to squash more mom-and-pop gun stores. That may be true. But let me tell you something. With the profiteering that these mom-and-pops are doing, I'm furious. You go in there and they got all these pro Second Amendment posters, how bad the government is, and all that garbage. But yet at the same time, I'm going, hey, I looked online and this gun was $300. They go, oh, well, yeah, but this is California. Oh, so there's an extra tax on them? Well, no, it's the same 8% tax that, you know, you pay for whatever you buy. Then why is it $500 here? Well, supply and demand. Oh, and do you have any in stock? No, I have to order them. So if you have to order all of them, why does that make it $500 retail? And they don't know. They're taking advantage of it. I saw what it was. It's $275 for Indiana for one. Gun shops make a lot of profit. Some things they make over 100%. Yeah, my friend's got a Marlin 795. I was gonna get one, but couldn't since Marlin moved. I guess they haven't started making them again. Oh, but yeah, guns are just outrageous here. And it really bothers me that these little gun shops are profiteering like that. And they act like it's not their fault. You know, and they're, you know, granted, okay, now if they said, I said, hey, look, we have higher operating costs here, we have higher insurances, we have all that, yeah, but there's no way it should be that. And I've, and General Carver's saying, I work in a gun shop. I worked in a gun shop as a kid, and I worked in as a gun in a gun shop as soon as I got out of the Army. I was kind of an armorer. I would fix things in the back, and he would give me this. I worked actually for three pawn shops. They'd get guns in, and I'd clean them up, make them look nice, because most people bring them in looking like garbage, and there'd be ejection problems and things. I specialized in the AR-15s and stuff because I just got out of the Army. And the gun shops in Colorado would have about a 40% markup. So if you came into a pawn shop and you had a $100 gun, he'd give you $60 for it and then turn around and sell it for $100.
Here's the same thing for a gun with
500. Yeah, the gun, all the pawn shops are the same. General Carver, are you in California? I think he said he was in Indiana, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I'm not venting towards you. I'm venting towards the California gun shops that are taking advantage of it. My point is, if I go to a gun shop in Indiana, I'm going to pay a fair price. But if I go to a gun shop here in California, they're going to mark it up, you know, 180-200%.
Isn't that price gouging?
I think it's gouging. I do. I think it's they're taking advantage of the crisis. Like when Obongo got elected, there were lines out the door at Sportsman's Warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
But their prices were reasonable. You know, you get a rifle for $375 at 308 Stevens or something. It was completely reasonable. So I didn't mind that. Number of Masonic gun shop owners must be high. I don't know. That's kind of funny. Maybe if I go in there and have Lou do all the secret Masonic stuff, I'll get the secret Masonic price. I should have him do that. But it's like I look all this stuff up. You know, suggested retail price for a Walther P-22 was $325. We go in there and they go, oh, no, that's not the California price. Oh, okay. Are you paying a higher fee to get them shipped to California? No.
No, you're paying for, like, the CAR.
Okay, Stronghold Radio first hour is coming to an end here. We're going to be back after the break with Steve Reno, and we're going to be talking about Code 20 and such, and we will do what we can do. We are coming to you live right now. I didn't give the date. I don't even know what it is. It's the 3rd of May, 2011. Hopefully, Liberty Tree Radio will pick us up, but if not, I'm happy with you guys. You guys are great. I feel like I'm sitting around a campfire shooting the bull, you know, throwing Mountain Dew cans over my shoulder into the dark, but I don't drink beer. But I shouldn't drink Mountain Dew, which I don't anymore anyway. But we'll be back after the break with Code 20, Steve Klein. Stick around. Call your friends. Tell them what we're doing.
All it does is make it harder to keep our homes and loved ones safe. So tell us why our guns to blame again for the violence in our lives. It's the criminals with their twisted minds. Another gun law will keep them in line. Like corn and love their rifles, for them it's live free or die. While they protect us on the front lines, we'll trust in God to keep our powder dry. Should the tide shift against we the people, you can bet this battle hymn will be sung. We'll be unto those who try to confiscate our guns, as written in the Second Amendment, for the security of a free state. A well-regulated militia is needed to keep our country safe. That right can't be infringed upon. Our founders have foreseen when the people fear government, you know it's called tyranny. Progressives, they want to change our country under the guise of making it fair. We know it's all about control. It's just an act when they say they care. Now the warning shots have been fired. The battle has just begun. Through all those secret backdoor deals, they are aiming for our guns. Like corn and love. to confiscate our guns. Just as a faithful quorum swears a solemn creed, in defense of his great nation, stand his rifle and me. We are all obliged to defend her, a constitution decrees. We will stand as one, united against foreign and domestic enemies. Like Portland, load the rifles, for them it's live free or die. We're united to defend our freedom, we'll trust in God to keep our powder dry. Should the tide shift against we the people, you can bet this battle hymn will be sung. Woe be unto those who try to confiscate our guns. There'll be no mercy for the fool who tries to confiscate my guns. Oh, yeah.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in
there. Put out all points, bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
Government is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Stronghold Radio. I don't know if we're streaming over Liberty Tree Radio. I heard they were having problems with their stream yesterday. But if we are, welcome to all of our Liberty Tree Radio listeners, our usual listeners, Facebook, the Beanpod people, and the folks listening on all the other outlets, thank you very much. Just before the break, we came back from the break, Freedom Warrior from Australia, I assume that's what Oz is, popped in. Welcome to all the listeners in the chat room, the folks listening on Facebook, and we're going to have a good day. Well, it's Tuesday, and just in case you're thinking, wanting to know if this is live, it is May 3rd, 2011. It is Tuesday. I am Dutch Jones, the Dread Pirate Roberts of the radio waves. I don't really exist. It's just a name. And because it's Tuesday, we have the Code 20 report coming up here right now with Steve Klein. Are you there, Steve?
Hey, I'm glad to be here with Code 20. We had a huge Code 20 today. It was interesting because now we got to go to the after-action report. It wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. There was some problems with some infiltrators, a Muslim. But before we get to that, hey, what do you think of a church where the pastor wants to teach sniping with his son? Dude, I want to go to that church.
Tell me
all about the pastor wanting to be a... He's going to teach how to be a sniper, and he's going to do it with his son at the Church of Kuya October 1st. So, hey, you've been talking a lot, Dutch, but I want you to keep talking. How's that for a guy who had a stroke a couple of weeks ago? Hey, go get him, buddy.
Doing the best I can. Yeah, the pastor wants to teach precision rifle. We all know what that means. And he and his son Luke and he have been going to classes, civilian classes. Neither of them have military background, but that's okay. But they are going to go to a class this week sometime to get to even get more training. I mean, I can't. It's just tons of stuff both of them have had in precision rifle, and they want to teach a sniping class to be part of the course that we're going to be doing the weekend that we're going to be doing in October. And I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's got his own private little course. It's going to be guerrilla sniping, I think is what he's going to call it, and it's going to be shooting on the move, rapid target acquisition, that kind of stuff. I'm really looking forward to it myself. In fact, I hope I can schedule it so I can break away and go over there.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'll tell you what, I normally don't do it, but I'll bring up my Weatherby 257 Magnum, Mr. Weatherby himself. That was his favorite rifle. Well, it's not a large round. It's extremely powerful, very fast, extremely flat trajectory. If you don't know what you're doing, one kid actually cut his eyebrow when it jumped back on the recoil. The scope got him in the face. Last time I bought bullets for that, it was $3 a round. I imagine it's $4 a round. So what I'll do as part of the fundraising, for $6 a round, you can shoot the 257 Magnum. Hopefully they can get it set up for how many yards or meters there were.
Well, I don't even know because it's a realistic range. It's all over a hillside. And there's targets of opportunity. We're working on making pop-up targets right now. We've got an engineer who's going to design something for us so we can have pop-up targets. So. It should be pretty good. A guy I got out of the military was an engineer. But, that's some latest stuff there. So I got just
my kind of pastor.
Yeah, yeah. And people want to go, where do I go? Where can I find a good patriotic church? Well, we're right here.
Right there.
Here in the belly button of California. Just before we went on, Freedom Warrior says, so what's going on in your neck of the woods? Steve, what went on yesterday, or was it today? Was it today?
Dave. Well, today what we're doing here in California, we're having multiple high school outreaches. Those would be kids from, say, age 15 to age 18. And what we do is we take out flyers on Islam. In fact, I'll read some of them. They're real, real graphic, real eye-catching. I learned from one of my buddies who leads about 2,000 Muslims to Christ a month in Egypt using Pal Talk, and he's an older gentleman. In fact, he was one of my instructors to the Marine Corps teaching Arabic, but he was so successful leading Muslims to Christ in Egypt that the president of Egypt, that would be Mubarak, who's now adios, and the Muslim Brotherhood are now in charge, but Mubarak called in to the president of the United States several years ago and demanded that this fellow be arrested because he was leading so many Muslims to Christ. His name is Father Zachariah. He lives not too far from me here. He's a good guy. He's actually evangelical Protestant, long story, but he's a good guy. But he actually was my employee for a couple of months in the Marine Corps, and I remember asking him one day, I said, hey, Father Zachariah, and I call him Father Zachariah, but he's Protestant. He was actually excommunicated by the Coptic Church because they're more works oriented, and this fellow came to understand that, you know, the Protestant notion of Christianity. But I said to Father Zachariah, I said, so how do you lead these Muslims to Christ on Pal Talk? I mean, he would debate them, some of the top Egyptian Muslim clerics, for 6, 7, 8 hours with as many as 10,000 people linked live listening to the debate. So anyways, make a long story short, he was kind of like military stuff. He says, I tell you, Mr. Steve, if you want to lead the Muslim to Christ, you must shock him. You have to shock him. So I never forgot that. And when I go and I work with Muslims, I always work on shocking them. I want them to learn quickly, very fast. What would Jesus do? We'll beat the hell out of what would Muhammad do? By a factor of a million. So we were passing out flyers today with police protection, and the flyer starts thus. Sex with a 4-year-old girl from a man who had sex with a 6-year-old girl, Mohammed and Aisha. See the first YouTube clip below, and then the kids, they pull out their iPhones and their sophisticated droids. Yeah, and they type in the website, and here comes on two Muslims talking about Ayatollah Khomeini having sex with a 4-year-old girl all night long, and that's okay under Islam because Muhammad had sex with a 6-year-old girl. It's called fighting. We've talked about that in the past. But the whole point of this flyer is to shock the kids. Very humorous, and then I want to get back to talking about using a ghillie suit in urban sniping. We can talk about that and laugh it up. But on the big picture of, was it Al Bundy was married with children?
Yeah.
And it shows him as Muhammad, and next to him is a little girl in a, right next to him is a little girl in a burqa and veil with a pacifier in her mouth, and it says married to children. It's a satire on Al Bundy and married with children. So we pass this out, and it works every time. Well, didn't work today.
Hey, at least
and
you
the
did
reason,
it.
Yeah, the, well, I'm going to admit it because the after-action report, Dutch, as you well know, after every firefight in the military, a lot of people don't realize this, it doesn't matter how hot and how nasty the firefight is, eventually, hopefully as fast as possible, we'll sit down and what we discuss, we do not discuss what we did right, we discuss what we did wrong,
yeah.
And we have to be honest, and actually, that's our Christian origins. What's it say? You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
That's right.
So I started asking some questions. I found things weren't working like normal. The police weren't quite as nice. The school administrators were in a real bad mood. Channel 7 News showed up. The school administrator in charge was lying right in front of myself and my retired CIA buddy, and we thought, man, something's wrong. So through the course of the outreach, sure enough, there was a guy who popped up. His name, I won't say his name because, you know, names always come back. This guy was an Iranian Muslim who was a member related to the Shah and lived in Iran when the Shah was deposed and Ayatollah Khomeini came back in. Now, this guy is still a Muslim, but he hates Ayatollah Khomeini and he hates Osama bin Laden, but he's still what? He's still a Muslim,
man.
He's still a Muslim. Now, 6 months ago, I was contacted by this group, and I gave them some really good insights that, yeah, we can work and amend the First Amendment, and the First Amendment is not absolute. We don't have absolute freedom of speech. We cannot falsely cry fire in a crowded theater. We do not have absolute freedom of assembly. You have to be peaceable. And we don't have absolute freedom of religion. For example, in the United States, the Mormon Church was not allowed to become a state in the United States. The civil government told the religion of the LDS, you cannot come into the United States until you give up polygamy. In fact, they had imprisoned a number of the Mormon leaders. Some guy, Cannon was his last name. So we were using that to prove that you can indeed regulate speech, you can indeed and must indeed regulate assembly, it has to be peaceful, and you must regulate religion. Let me give you another example. One of the examples I gave, if you started the first church of evangelical Muslim cannibals, and their worship service was to sacrifice little children on the altar and eat them, obviously the state has a compelling interest to regulate them, so I presented that to these folks, but this Muslim, Iranian Muslim, Shiite Muslim, he didn't understand Anglo-American common law, and he didn't like what he was hearing, didn't like it at all. So he, being a good Muslim, you have to also understand under the culture of Islam that it's very tribal, and that men try their best to be the alpha dog, the commander, and especially, now this is real important for us as Americans or Australians or Kiwis or Europeans. If the guy says he's a Muslim, then he thinks he is Superman and he thinks that we are subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way their culture is. So if you make a suggestion to a Muslim man, then he's automatically going to consider, I don't listen to a dog or a pig or an ape, because I am of the chosen race. This is something you got to understand. So, once again, I was real polite to these people. I said, hey, look, I'll still give you information. I'll work with you on constitutional stuff. You can use it any way you want, but I will not be around when that guy is involved because he doesn't understand the golden rule, the two great commandments, the golden rule, treat others as you would be treated, as you want to be treated, because in Islam, they don't have a golden rule. So, okay, over time, this guy, he caused nothing but problems. He had a group, a cult following of about 50, about 45 dropped away, but he still got a small group, about 5 or 6 people. Well, unbeknownst to me, I got to be careful what I say. one of my key leaders had leaked information to one of his cult followers of this Iranian Muslim.
Right.
The Iranian Muslim got a hold of it and flew off the handle once again. He is Superman. We are subhuman. Doesn't matter if we understand Anglo-American common law. Doesn't matter if we know the Constitution. What matters for him is he's a Muslim. He knows everything. We are just lower than whale poop, and that's the way it is. So this Iranian Muslim took it on himself after we had contacted the police and done everything perfectly. He called up the school district, the school superintendent, and what do Muslims always do? Lie. He lied. And it was really intense. It was difficult. It was hard. There was a lying from one student said that allegedly said that we had assaulted him and forced him to take a flyer, which never happened. But once again, having the foresight to send out the letter that we do, and if any of your listeners want to see this letter, we've used this letter in Wisconsin, we've used it in Ohio, we've used it in Missouri, we've used it in California, we've used it in Idaho. It always works. It gets the police or the sheriffs out there to protect us. It always works. But in this case, I could sense that there was just a spirit of evil. And when I found out that the Muslim guy had come in, I thought, well, of course. People, when they've been lied to and they don't want to, you know, take the truth, then they blow it out. So the after-action report. I called up the guy that had worked with this cult gal. And I said, you know, I told you, don't do this. And he profusely apologized. So I made him a deal. I said, look, pardon?
He was humbled. He
was humbled.
Good, good, good.
Yeah. He was humbled. He admitted his guilt. So I said, if we do it in the future, we'll have to change our ways a little bit. I said, let's do this. Let's just draw a 50-mile radius circle around where this guy lives, and we will leave them alone and do other schools, and then next year we'll come back when we have our own following. So, once again, it's an after-action report. If you walk into, you know, you do a recon by force, a lot of people don't understand that. You just walk into the enemy lines and allow them to start shooting at you until you figure out what are their weapons, what are their tactics, what's their location. Then you withdraw, you change your operation order, a fragment order, and then as fast as possible you attack and annihilate them. A lot of people don't understand that. But a lot of warfare, look at Douglas MacArthur, total failure in the Battle of New Guinea. Saved, rescued New Zealand and Australia, but the number of soldiers KIA in New Guinea was way too high, and he almost got relieved from duty on that, and he sat down and came up with island hopping. So from a nightmare going out, a gigantic reconnaissance in force, we had never engaged the Japanese in such mass numbers as New Guinea. He learned his lesson. He came up with island hopping, and then he was a famous guy from that. So We learned, so let's have a little lighthearted laughter here. So we're going to teach sniper classes in urban warfare, and we're all going to wear ghillie suits. Take it, Dutch.
Yeah, well, it comes down to being dressed appropriately for the mission, and it just came out of the last hour. Somebody said, you know, why don't we talk about urban survival and urban sniping? And we started the discussion. I'm getting all kinds of messages, and like they didn't want me to stop. They liked it. And we were talking about that there's a difference between being in the mountains of Afghanistan and in the city of Fallujah. And being in the city of Fallujah and being in the city of Paris, France during World War II when you're going after Nazi scumbags. And then we've learned a lot from these, you know, that military operations, urban terrain is what I was taught. Now it's all completely different. But you don't wear the same tactical gear. And that's what I see all the militia guys doing. They're all buying all these ghillie suits, these great big, huge rifles, which are great. But there's a whole other side to it.
They're going to go to downtown Los Angeles and take on MS-13 wearing their ghillie suits. Yeah. They're going to be like, what are you doing, man?
Those of you that are going to be trapped in the cities or choose to stay, I'm not going to question your logic, but I'm saying Ruger 10/22 with a nice bipod, some 30-round mag, folding stock,
absolutely
a decent scope, and some really good high-velocity hollow-point rounds, and a burglary kit, basically. Your pry bars, your bolt cutters, your screwdrivers, your ball peen hammers for breaking holes in walls to make loopholes.
Great idea.
Duct tape, some black fabrics.
Yep.
Dust mask, goggles, whatever you would use to either do search and rescue or burglary, basically. You know, a little bit of rope. You know, Charles Bronson isn't the only one that needs rope. You can, you know, get out of a structure quickly. Study the terrain, the sewers, the buildings, the thing. You know, if you're in L.A. and you got...
Study the mosques.
The mosques.
Study the mosques.
Yeah, study where the mosques are.
Study the mosques. Yeah. Believe me, they're all going to have AK-47s. And they all speak Arabic, so that their ability to speak Arabic and English gives them a leg up. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's a great point. Learn the avenues of egress and you know, how are you going to get in and out of an area. And don't worry about practicing that 1,000-yard shot. You're going to say, but I just have a Ruger 10/22. study
ain't going to happen.
Crowd control that the Israelis do with Ruger 10/22s, 100-yard shots, they're shooting people in the head with hollow points.
That's a long way. Yeah.
You know, and that's really all you need to do. What, Lou?
Seals.
Sorry?
Seals.
Oh, Navy SEALs do the same thing. Lou keeps bringing that up.
Yeah.
Navy SEALs do the same thing with 22s. They're a great gun.
Lou, jump on there. Don't stay in the background.
He's
dude.
Leaning
get
way
there.
Back. He won't lean into the mic. He's got the mic too far forward. He's chilling today.
The Ruger 10/22, when my son, who's killed many, many people, close up, far away, with Barrett 50 cal, and then with an M4 real close, the guy that, you know, blown up by a suicide bomber, shot, bleeding to death, somehow survived, and then he killed about 13 Al-Qaeda in less than 20 seconds, getting off 90 rounds in three magazines in less than, I think he did it in 20 seconds. I actually saw his gear after he was, but anyway... When he was young, I worked him with a Ruger 22, and then he went into the Army, and he thought it was pretty funny. And then he's the only medic and sniper in the entire military of all the branches combined. And he went out, he whacked a bunch of people and stuff, and I had told him, look, dude, Ruger 22, 10/22, one of the best weapons in the world. And then when he came back from... Iraq after he'd whacked a bunch and he got blown up and shot up, which was not his fault. It was General Petraeus and his commander's fault, and somehow he survived it. But Dutch is absolutely right. Magic says the same thing. Ruger 10/22 is one of the finest weapons ever made. It's not as good as an AK-47, and maybe it is as good as a AK-47. I know a lot of you are scoffing and laughing. Well, sport, between me and my kid, I'll take any of you guys on any of your stories. Ruger 10/22 in any environment, especially in urban, consider this. 99% of your fighting at nighttime is going to be nighttime, and I actually took the scope off of my Ruger 10/22 because I that's all I did in Vietnam was night fighting. We didn't have nods. The starlights didn't work. And so Dutch is absolutely right. So and the bullets for a 10/22 are, compared to everything else, they're cheap. And the other thing is, everybody in America's got a 22. So if you run out of ammunition, look at the dude laying dead on the floor. He's your ammunition. He's your armor. He's everything. You can. And that weapon is so dependable.
Every pimp in L.A. is going to have at least 10 rounds of 22 in his pocket.
Every pimp.
so
that would be Sheriff Baca.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah,
by the way, his son was in charge of the police today, Sheriff Baca.
Oh no, he was out there with you
guys. Yeah,
it was bizarre.
Yeah. Dude, I think that was part of the problem.
Yeah, definitely. And then the thing with the Ruger 10/22 is there's all kinds of modifications you can do. You can, you know,
sure.
You know, and I say just stay simple. Just go with the wooden stock or maybe a folding stock from Butler Creek. If you're in California, you can't remove the pin. It can't fold, but at least you know that when the stuff hits the fan, you can just take it out of there. But someone's saying a tomahawk, the ATAC VTAC tomahawk, which I've seen, is great for breaching. You can pry doors open with it. You can hack a hole through drywall to make a little loophole. We have what we call rescue hatchets that are these pry bar hatchet little rubber tools that we get that we have in all of our kits. You can use them to cut a hole in a wall. You can break a window. You can cleave a head if you have to for up-close stuff if you get surprised. But a Ruger 10/22 with like a semi-automatic or a high-capacity revolver in .22, you're good to go. You know, you get a couple sheets of different colors of fabric you can tape up in windows or behind you. You could go to town.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The Ruger 10/22, you and I could fire very actively 10 rounds in maybe 5 to 7 seconds. You know, 50 feet away, that's realistic. Now, I got that Weatherby 257 Magnum. You're lucky to get 3 decent shots in a minute off of that. And most people don't realize, you know, the old thing, one shot, one kill. Come on, get serious. If it's nighttime shooting, what wins war is getting the most bullets out the
volume.
Fastest you possibly can. Yeah, volume of bullets, especially urban warfare is going to be close. It's going to be nighttime. And frankly, if everything falls apart and you're out, whether it's in the desert or you're in the heavy vegetation there at the church at Cahuilla right there on the creek and whatnot, once again, my mode of operation is I'm looking for rainy, snowy night, dark night. I want the worst weather possible. Yeah. So I'm going to get in within 2 or 3 feet. In fact, I was looking at pistols today. I was looking at a 1924. It was made 25 caliber, 6-shot, semi-automatic, and I almost bought it. I'm going to buy one within 3 months. And once again, I'm going to get within, as I did in Vietnam, the furthest I'm going to be from my enemy is 10 feet or closer.
Yeah.
You know what? I can almost be blind and be a good shot.
It goes back to, like, Rogers' rules of engagement from the Rogers Rangers. It was like, stalk your enemy like you would a deer. See him first. Get close. Kill him. I mean, that's simple. It doesn't get much simpler than that. I mean, the original is in Old English. I'm not going to do the accent, but I probably could get away with it. But it's like, it's basic. I've always found the best guys in the military that when I was in, were poachers. And deer hunters and farm boys that had to feed their families, you know, by going out and shooting something. Not these guys that go to the range and shoot clay pigeons constantly and all that kind of stuff.
No. Clay pigeons, paper targets. It's good to get a feel for your weapon and stuff, and both Dutch and I encourage you to do that, you know, to go out and then you got to clean the weapon and think what you're doing. But, like, we had one guy, I think it was our first training session, the guy says, well, I want tactical shooting, and Dutch and I both said, well, if you want tactical shooting, go join the Army or Marine Corps, go over to Iraq and Afghanistan. You want tactical shooting? Then let people shoot at you, and then, boy, then you're going to learn tactical shooting.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I would say. You know, I'm going to teach you what to do if somebody's in your house and you're in a hallway that's 5 feet wide and, you know, 8 to 10 feet long. That's the kind of shooting I want to do. It's coming up in the chat room. They're saying, talk about muzzle flash. Yeah, low muzzle flash with .22 ammo. Low report with .22 ammo. You know, anything's loud when you're in a car or in a hallway, but still, I could get away with firing 100 rounds out of a 10/22 and then walk down the street and not have a hearing loss like I would if I was firing my Mosin Nagants. You know, which might be good because they're going to be looking for somebody who's going, huh? What?
Talk about muzzle flash. They flip it. Just flip it. Okay, they're shooting. They got their muzzle flash. I'm all over them. I can get 10 rounds on them, probably 10 rounds in 5 seconds. Plus, the other thing, Dutch, you said it. You stalk them. If they're stalking you, I don't care how good your weapon is, you're dead. You're toast. You stalk them. Rogers Rangers, absolutely. You're in, you're out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And the cool thing about a Ruger 10/22, it's lightweight. You're not carrying, even M4s are, I hate carrying them around. And with all, you know, a 30-round mag on an M4 weighs probably as much as the whole rifle does of a 10/22. And how many, okay, I can carry a box of 500 rounds of .22 the same weight as about 4 mags of .223.
Because
I put them in the same carrier on my gear. I put a whole box in the magazine carrier for the, you know, regular AR-15 mags, and it's 500 rounds in a little cardboard box right there. You know, because I've got a bolt-action .22. Yeah, and so you carry you carry 1,000, 1,500 rounds, and people are saying, yeah, but you've got to shoot somebody 3 or 4 times. Okay, well, how many times are you going to shoot him? You going to shoot him once with your AR-15? No, nobody does that. You know, boom, okay, he's dead. One shot, one kill. I saw it in a movie. That's what I'm going to do. No, you're going to put... You're going to do good.
Not at nighttime.
No, you're going to, you know, if you've got a visual on them, you're going to, you know, 10 feet away, right in the back of the head, five rounds and run, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the way it goes. Exactly. You know, for all you people to go, that sure doesn't sound very Coram Deo. Okay, you know.
You're killing me.
We're already at, I'm just telling you the things I've been hearing the last couple of days. It's warfare,
oh,
folks. We're already on the right side. We're already in the just cause. You know,
they're coming after us. We're in self-defense.
J.L. in the Bible put the enemy king, I can't remember his name, to sleep with warm milk and then stuck a tent peg through his head with one whack. You know, that was a just kill. You know, that was, you know, so we're already on the right side. So, you know,
assassinating Adolf Hitler. You got to be kidding me. That's wrong. Come on, guys. It's warfare. You do it on Christian principles, but they're here. We're not over there. I mean,
yeah.
I'm talking about us in the United States or Australia or New Zealand, Europe, whatever.
Yeah, we civilians.
I want to go back, if we can, Mr. Dutch, Mr. Comrade Dutch, after action report, weaving all of this stuff together, the Coram Deo, the Ruger 22, you know, you don't use a ghillie suit in an urban area. I could just see MS-13 like it's some guy walking across the street in a ghillie suit thinking, whoa, is that Sasquatch? What's that guy doing?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you wouldn't want to see MS-13 with her colors on, you know, with her pants hanging down around their butt and they're trying to go through the brush of, you know, where we are. So back to the Code 20 and the SMEAC, the Situation, Mission, Execution, Administration, and Command. And today on the After Action Report, under S for Situation, good, and we can weave this in with Osama bin Laden, you know, the whack, you know, being shot and stuff. In the environment, under the S for Situation of SMEAC, Situation, Mission, Execution, Administration, Command. And I got this from my son, who's a combat medic, and he's into DNA and battlefield forensics and things. He's actually done it. It's not the nonsense of the guy in the classroom. So under environment, you got three subcategories of situation. Number one, you got environment. Number two, you got friendlies. Number three, you got the enemy. Where I got whacked today was some of my buddies went behind my back and told an Iranian Muslim what we were doing, thinking he was a friendly, and it backfired. Well, the good news is nobody got hurt, no harm, no foul, and now they finally believe me. But going up to environment, my son sent me an email. You may have seen it, Dutch. Under Islam, a lot of people don't realize it. Under Islam, you get a lot of interbreeding, especially amongst first cousins. So I would assume that with multiple wives, and then you got first cousins under multiple wives, you're doing some pretty perverted stuff, and it's done all the time. Under Islam, they have a hell of a time with the interbreeding, with the, I can't remember the illness or the malady where they interbreed with, you know, too close together, and that's inbreeding, you know, it causes insanity and, you know, moronic
they
things of that
bleeders
nature.
And all, they become hemophiliac,
yeah, exactly.
And everything, yeah.
Exactly. So my son said, well, the DNA testing on Obama is going to do no good because they're all interbred. So under environment and situation, and see, now that goes to the belief system of Islam, which is based on perversion, PMS, power, money, sex, RPM, religious, political, and military, the MPH, the Muslims per host. And that goes right back to, you know, look, I'm going to go through this again, and we have to go through this because eventually we're going to form our own government. I mean, we're not going to just go out there like the dog that chased the car for 5 years and then he finally catches the car and he says, gee, I don't know what to do with the car. When we're victorious, and we will be in certain areas, then we have to form our own government. So, and that goes back to education. So the overarching purpose of education is to transmit the wisdom of our ancestors to every child that we might all live in the land with the highest degree of peace, order, liberty, and prosperity. That's our Christian ancestors, our Christian wisdom. Under Islam, the overarching purpose of education is to teach boys only in madrasas, beating them until they become like Muhammad, yeah, so they can transform the whole world in the 7th century Arabia, causing the highest degree of hostility, disorder, slavery, and misogyny. Now, the interbreeding of these people causes insanity, bleeding, all kinds of health problems and stuff, and that's one of the reasons why they've fallen apart. And then people always ask me, well, all right, you guys are Christians. What's Christianity or what's religion got to do with this government stuff? Well, glad you asked. You know, the practical application of our deepest held and most cherished beliefs is known as politics or government. And, of course, that begs the question, well, what is our deepest held and most cherished beliefs? That's religion. For example, under our westernized, even with our New Agers and everybody else, we still have a thought pattern of Christianity, doing to others as you would have done unto yourself, taking care of widows and orphans. So we, our army, always acts to protect, to shield women and children. But the Muslim armies always use the widows and orphans, the women and children, as shields. So going right back to what we're starting to talking about, Code 20, creating our own government based on Christian principles, based on the education that we got from Pastor Warren Campbell, who wants to teach sniper training, but he's going to teach it in a biblical way. So that, do we whack these guys? Well, can we whack Adolf Hitler? Absolutely, yeah. If he's doing this stuff. So all of this is bound together, and we're going to be talking about this October the 1st and 2nd at the Church of Kuya. Dutch is training, I'm training, pastors training. We got Pakistani Christians. We got black people. Isola Foster coming in to teach. We've got Filipino, whose father was a guerrilla in World War II, some of the most successful guerrillas in the history of warfare, 6,000 years of the Filipino guerrillas. We're going to have red and yellow, black and white.
Yeah, so
we're going to have everything there. Everything.
Don't dare call us racist. I'm getting sick of that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, we go out with, I work with Middle East Christians. I work with the Egyptians, the Iraqis, Iranian Christians, Lebanese Christians. All, as long as they're Christians, I'll work with them.
Yeah.
One of my best guys was an Egyptian Christian who was tortured for 6 months in Egypt. He was one of the richest men in Egypt, and he was, what he was doing was using his money to start an underground railroad to smuggle Muslims who became Christians to get them out of Egypt.
Good.
And a lady was tracked down by the secret police in Holland, and they told her, if you don't tell us
how you got here,
who got you out of, yeah, how you got here, we're going to kill your son and daughter still back in Egypt. So she squealed on my buddy. They threw him in prison, shocked him, beat him, and everything. They are very close friends because he's a Christian, and he knew the right thing for her to do was to sacrifice him to protect those two kids. I have no problems with that, and
he knew that going into it too.
He knew that, absolutely.
Yeah.
And love is the fulfilling of all law. Under Islam, it's hate. Maseo is the fulfilling of all law. And once again, Dutch is doing a great job talking SMEAC and talking about Christian battle planning. Pastor Warren Campbell has a huge heart for the Lord. And I know for the modern Christian this sounds crazy, but for Robert E. Lee and all those guys, it was like, I mean, we all know this. Bingo.
Yeah, yeah. So people get caught up so much in the little things, they're not willing to even explore the big concepts. You know, wise men talk about wise things. Simple people sit around and discuss the simple things that they never get past. And it's such a pain. And that's why, you know, you'll see a mixture of stuff on the show. I tell everybody, it's as if we're sitting around a campfire. We just had a great day of hunting, a great day of training. We fished. We went gold panning, whatever it was. And now we're all just talking about the things that wiser people talk about, that people of action, people that care about what their kids are going to inherit, these are the things we talk about on here. And those that are offended by it, those that are frightened by it, they need to go to another campfire.
yeah.
You know, and I don't wish them ill. I just wish they'd go to another campfire. You know?
Yeah.
Go somewhere else. Go where they just, you know, have a carnival on a weekend at their church and they pop balloons and eat pie. That's fine. Go do that. You know? That's
no
just the way
it is. No problem with that at all. Yeah, no problem with that at all. Yeah, if you look at the military, what, the Green Berets are less than 1%, the Marine guys less than 1%, the sniper type guys less than 1%. It's a very, you know, even the leaders in the infantry, the stuff that I did in Vietnam, less than 1%. So if you don't have a heart for it, that's okay, but don't get in the way of the warriors who are out there. Like in King David went out on a raid once and he got to a brook, it's in First or Second Kings, he got to a brook and like half of his guys chickened out. He said, you know what, guys? Just sit down here, take it easy. When we come back, we'll share the booty with you. And then they joined in. They didn't browbeat him. They shared the spoils with him. It was all very biblical. It was based on love is the fulfilling of all law. So, absolutely. The Church of Kaweah is really, it's the cutting edge of the Reformation, what Luther did, nailing the 95 theses on the, I think it was the Wittenberg Castle. Pastor Warren, his dad, and Dutch Jones are all doing the same thing right now. It's interesting. It seems to run in 500-year cycles. So right now, where we think the church is so weak throughout the world and Islam is so strong, or New World Order, I don't see it that way. I see that the church is at a pivotal a moment, and they're going to do a column right, and on that pivot foot, come right back in, and things are going to be looking really good. I know you guys into the rapture and all that stuff. You know what? If that's the route you want to take, like Dutch said, go to the church where they're having the parties and blowing up balloons. As for us, we're going to follow the Lord.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there is some hope. I mean, down in your neck of the woods, that Hemet Calvary Chapel, those three pastors got arrested. They weren't very smart, but they were very... Their heart was in the right place. They went to the DMV and started reading scripture. They were, you know, and that video, that highway patrolman sounded like a sodomite.
He was kind of a screwball.
Yeah, he's like, you can't do this. You're preaching to a captive audience. There's no such charge. He ended up charging him with trespassing, even though he, you know, they were never.
Right.
But Calvary Chapel pastors are starting to be
Calvary
bold.
Chapel.
Yeah.
I
was blown away by that. And I'm not kidding. Yeah. The night before, I told the pastor, I said, until I start seeing mainstream churches going and protesting DMVs, I'm not going to have hope. And I am not kidding you. That night, I go home and check my email, and one of the listeners says, hey, did you hear about this guy down in Hemet? Does your guy Steve know anything about this? I know he's from that neck of the woods. And I was like, wow. So have you heard more about that? Have you explored any more about that?
They're working on the lawsuit right now. Aaron Rasmussen used to actually go out street preaching with that guy and knows him real well. And we'll reach out to him. And he's a good street preacher warrior, but doing the stuff that we're doing, I don't think he's interested. And once again, I'll just say, hey, God bless you. At least if he's doing that, he's still expanding the kingdom of God and driving back, you know, the gates of hell will not prevail. So I'm going, dude, go for it.
Going after the tyranny and going after the unjustful tax and willingly being arrested, unlike some people I know are like, I'm not willing to be arrested. Okay.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to be arrested either, but I mean, if that's what it takes sometimes to get, you know, to get righteousness to prevail and to let them know that we're not going to let them do something stupid, that's what we got to do. I mean, I don't want to get arrested.
And that goes back to Dietrich Bonhoeffer the generals that were, you know, it's interesting. One of those generals, a lot of people don't realize that there was an Admiral Canaris. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Mm. Admiral Canaris was in the... he was in charge of the Abwehr, which is like our CIA. Admiral Canaris hated Hitler and hated the Third Reich. He stayed in charge of the Abwehr, and he actually, in the Battle of Anzio, which we almost lost when the Allies, the Americans, were landing at Anzio, almost didn't make it. And Admiral Canaris, who was a good Christian man, was actually feeding false information to the German generals in Italy, and the false information he was feeding to them about the Allies enabled the Allies to get a foothold into Anzio. Mm. So there's an interesting concept where kind of like, Joseph in the working for Pharaoh and whatnot. So this guy, while he remained quiet, he was doing what he could. He couldn't stop the annihilation of the innocent people in Germany, but he could do something else as a very, very important member in charge of the Abwehr or the CIA of Germany, working with a Lutheran pastor, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And he's got some problems with his theology, but I think all of us got, you know, because the Bible's infinite. But Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he did it. He did it for real. So, in fact, Bonhoeffer lived in Germany for the first year or so of World War II and felt so guilty, he went back to Germany just so he could help the German people try to destroy the Third Right.
He realized what he did was wrong, that he took flight rather than fight, and you know, he said, no, I can't sit by and allow my nation to be destroyed by this madman. And, you know, it's just history's always that way, you know. That guy was a great hero, but when people start standing up around us today, what do? They throw, and I'm not saying I'm a hero, I'm saying you're a hero, but anytime somebody starts to, you know, flip the bird to the bad guys, they go, hey, how dare you do that? You shouldn't be doing that. You know, you're going to get yourself in trouble. You better not do that. I'm like, well, okay. But yet those are the same people that want to benefit from the liberty that is earned when it's over with, you know. And I'm not saying I'm a hero. I'm just hoping that I trigger a hero, that somebody out there hearing the sound of my voice or Lou or somebody, you know, after I'm dead, runs with this information and builds on it and restores the law of the land and the law written on the heart, and that we make this a Christian nation again and everybody's free and... going the way God wanted us to go. I don't think that I'm going to die some glorious, you know, heroic thing on the battlefield. No, I don't think that at all. But I do think that unless people answer the clarion call, nothing's going to happen.
Exactly.
And that's why we go out and do these things, especially you. You're out there on the front lines with this Muslim thing, and people can argue all they want about, you know, well, you're focusing on just one problem, and I'm not even going to go there. But, well, that's how you deal with things. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
You know,
you've got to deal, and the 500-pound gorilla in the room is evil. It's Satan. They all work for Satan, like we said yesterday when you were on for a special, you know, edition when we were talking about, Obama bin Laden getting, you know, supposedly killed. Did I say Osama bin Laden or Obongo bin Laden? I keep mixing them up. I keep screwing it up, man. Well, whoever...
Check their DNA.
Yeah.
Their cousins.
You never see them in the same place together, I said yesterday. You know, it's like Superman, Clark Kent kind of thing going on there. But, yeah, it's we've got to do something. We've got to answer these. And sometimes you got to talk about the things that make people uncomfortable, like what does it take to sneak up on a bad guy and put 5 rounds of 22 into his head and make his face look like a hamburger pie? You got to do it.
Welcome to Battlefield. Oh, man. Yeah, the first thing, when I looked at that picture, I looked and went, that doesn't look like the headshots I saw in Vietnam. Yeah absolutely.
Yeah, everything looks too pretty.
Let's talk about Larry Wick and getting him in here May 21st. We're in May, huh?
May 20th, May 20th. You in the past keep saying May 21st. It's May 20th.
May 20th, sorry.
Yeah, don't miss the first day. It's Friday, Saturday, and part of Sunday. And then half a day Sunday, and we'll do church right after. We're going to learn how to disarm maniacs and then go to church at noon on Sunday. Isn't that great? It's unarmed self-defense, what to do when everything goes wrong, taking a weapon from an attacker. You make that decision whether you're going to dispatch that attacker or flee, but it gives you that luxury. It's stuff that you can practice. It's all upper body. It's minimal strength required. You know, he's the way Larry Wick put it in one of the interviews when I talked to him on the phone. He wants a 100-pound female cop to be able to stop a 300-pound aggressor in the street. He's tired of seeing female cops on YouTube getting beat up. That's where he came up with this. That and actually mental health workers. He has a whole system for mental health workers because you can't really hurt the patient. You know, if you're working in an inmate, you know, level 8 facility with criminally insane. Because they're insane, they have extra rights, but they still will try to tear your eyeballs out of your head. I speak from experience. I did it for a while. And so he has this whole system on legal things you can do to dissuade somebody from trying to suck your brain out through your face. And so he's got a whole system for that. It is a real Christian approach. It's like, leave me alone, but if you decide not to leave me alone, I'm going to do one of 3 things to you, and the third thing is kill you if I feel I have to do it, but I can do 1 and 2 and get away. I'm going to disarm you. I'm going to create a huge amount of pain in you so that you don't want to chase me, but if you do decide or I think you're going to chase me, I'm going to dispatch you from this planet. And that's what I like about it. It gives you control and total control. And for those of us that live in occupied territory, it's real legal, too. You know, it's like, because in this state, if you take a knife away from somebody and then you do the 18 cuts that we were shown in one of our classes, you're going to prison. They're like, why did you cut every major artery in his body? That's how I was trained. You know, we can't do that.
That's funny.
You know, it's going to be, well, he came at me with a knife, I did this move, and he stabbed himself. I didn't, you know, it's, I was just trying to save my life, and he kept aggressing, so I had to stab him. It's not like, I did these ninja moves because I saw him on TV. which is unfortunately what a lot of people think they're going to do. A lot of people
right.
think that brute force and just taking a few martial arts classes, you know, or you know, do it. Oh, somebody's saying May 21st is the rapture. Yeah, that's right, ex-cop. We're laughing about
that. That's right. That's right. That's
yeah.
right. That's
yeah.
right.
I keep trying to get those
that.
People to sign their houses over to me, and they won't do it.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them.
I tried doing that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, great minds think alike, yeah. Okay, so May 20th is the training, Larry Wick, and if I'm listening to you correctly, Larry starts with a proper theology, and then he makes his decision-making, and is, a lot of people don't understand that, I don't want to get too deep. But yeah, Larry, I like that, that. I know and I understand. I watched some of his videos, and it's the same thing with Code 20. We always start with the right theology. All of the guys that I go out with, we bring them up to the Church of Kauai. We teach them the theology, and we get them going the right way. So this is all part and parcel to that. And also, in some of the things, since we're working on self-defense, and then when whatever happens with the New World Order or the Muslims or the United Nations, whatever, then we have our own little counties to become our own states. It'll be, I think, very similar to the small states in Europe as things
yeah.
fall apart. And so understanding and knowing the principles, Christian principles of government, that's where Dutch and I, you'll hear us talking about the law written on the heart, and a lot of you, I'm sure, are thinking, man, these guys are crazy. Well, that's found in the Constitution of the United States. It's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10. You'll see these three words, the law of nations. And most of you, I know you're familiar with Blackstone, William Blackstone's commentaries. It's online. You can go online, William Blackstone's commentaries, look at Book 4, Chapter 5, and it talks about the offenses against the law of nations. And it talks about pirates, what you do with them, you kill them. And this is coming, Blackstone says, look, all of the civil law is based on the Holy Scriptures. And this law of nations is actually defined by a fellow by the name of Hugo Grotius, who's considered the father of international law. And he clearly points out there in the first 25 pages of his book, it's called The Law of War and Peace by Hugo Grotius. He says that the law written on the heart for the individual is called the law of nations for the nations. And so that the nations in Europe at that time all operated off of agape is the fulfilling of all law, Romans 13:10. The law written on the heart, which is Jeremiah 31:33, Hebrews 8:10, Hebrews 10:16. And this is what Pastor Warren Campbell, Dutch, myself, and I have a hunch, Larry Wick is working on the same thing, that as long as you're operating under the law written on the heart, which is agape is the fulfilling of all law, then you take these steps. And eventually, if they're going to try to rape and murder and destroy your wife and children, then you have no choice. And in fact, I could just see somebody, let's say that my wife gets brutalized, raped, and murdered, right? And I just stand there praying, and then yeah. I die. I go to heaven. I'm standing before Jesus, and he says, you know, I'm really not going to tell you, well done, good and faithful servant. I'm going to tell you, depart from me, you worker of iniquity. I never knew you. Because God has written this law on our heart. Thou shalt not murder also means thou shalt protect and preserve life. And that's all Dutch Jones is saying, I'm saying, Pastor Campbell is saying, Larry Wick is saying. That's all we're saying.
And if you can't get that concept, if you sat through the classes and you get anything else, you're just not listening.
Yeah, we start with that, right?
Yeah, I know. It's so basic, and you hit it every time as a refresher. I hit it on the shooting range. I'm not training you to go out and gun people down because you don't like the color of their shoes. I'm not training you to go shoot somebody because you don't like their philosophy or the music they play. I'm training you to defend your life and property and the life of others that you care about when deadly force is brought against you. That's all we do here. And anybody that gets anything else other than that is either retarded or has an agenda. Period. So you get to choose which one you are. You know, you're going to be retarded or have an agenda.
Or both.
Or, yeah,
or
have,
both.
Have a retarded agenda.
Agenda.
Yeah. So, I know people get mad. You're so mean. You're so, you know what? I don't have time. I had two strokes last year. Last year. See, that's how bad it is. Last month, And I'm not going to cut corners. I'm not going to not do what I think God is telling me to do because I might step on somebody's toes. I'm not going to go out of my way to be a jerk. That tends to be what happens to me. Other people are jerks to us in this cause, but we're not going to attenuate the message because somebody thinks it may send the wrong message to people who don't understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything we do is biblical. I know a lot of people don't understand it. And once again, if they were to go back and talk to Robert E. Lee in the English Civil War, some of you perhaps have heard about the Westminster Confession. Some of you, maybe you've heard of a fellow by the name of Oliver Cromwell. You may have some misgivings about Oliver. Yeah, Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell actually was the ruler in charge of the Westminster Confession, and a number of the theologians, they call them divines, in the Westminster Confession were his personal chaplains, and it was Oliver Cromwell who created the rule of law, and the rule of law comes from the word equity, which is found in Psalms 98 and 99. It's found 10 times only in the Old Testament. It's translated righteousness in the New Testament, and the word equity means that the king is under the law as the lowest and basest of subjects or citizens, so that the street person lying in the gutter, if he's charged with a crime, under equity, under Christian law, agape is the fulfilling of all law, then he gets the same jurisprudence, the same procedures, due process, evidentiary rules as the king or Obongo, the Muslim in chief. So this stuff all comes from the Holy Bible. And you even have Jesus in two places. One, he's a theophany standing outside Jericho. And Joshua walks up to him and says, "Are you for us or against us?" And Jesus, the theophany, says, "No." In other words, you better be for me. And then in Revelations 19:11, Lou's favorite passage because it's a 19:11 Colt 45. In Revelations 19:11, Jesus judges, and he also is in charge of the army, makes war, and the blood of his enemies is so deep his horse is literally swimming in the blood. And that, again, that mystifies too many people. He's killing these people to get rid of them so they won't injure his blessed saints in the church. So it's, once again, it's love is the fulfilling of all law. I'm going to shut up and let you close out the story.
Well, it's perfect timing right there. We're getting ready to roll the outgoing music, and our God is an awesome God. So that was a good point. Another good social interface outreach attempt by Code 20 with Steve Klein. I don't know how many people are now yelling at their radios or cheering their radios or looking up. I had two people say, one in the chat room, one in email said, "Now I have to go buy a 1022. I'm going to blame you guys." So.
Oh, they can go
shoot
with it.
Yeah, they can come up here and shoot it with us. So, folks, you heard it pretty clear. If you like what you're hearing here, if you like the message that we put out, whether you're listening on Liberty Tree Radio or anywhere else, we need your financial support. Straight out donations, it says zero. Go look at it. It's zero. That was, you know, we had some people get some backpacks and stuff, but it's May, and we got to pay some bills. It says zero. You guys know what it takes. I told you, I'm not going to flog a dead horse. Go to DutchJones.info. DutchJones.info and make a donation. Any size donation is appreciated to help pay the bills. So, folks, thanks for listening. This has been Stronghold Radio coming to you over many outlets. Thanks, Scotty, for retransmitting us in New York over AM. Special thanks to Liberty Tree Radio if they picked us up on the guest stream there. And anyone else, you pod people, keep tuning in, keep listening to us at work. I like those messages. So, for me, Stacy, Lewis, and everybody else here at Camp Kaweah, God bless you and all you do in the holy cause of liberty. Goodbye. Okay, I'm turning down my mic now.